Welcome to Baldhead Bible Podcast, making the Bible come to life, featuring the expository preaching of Dr. John Katzian.
Adam was amazed at what he was seeing. His beautiful Eve had just eaten the forbidden fruit. She had just taken a big fat bite out of that beautiful, tempting fruit. And she was fine. Or so Adam thought. Look, she looked great. The serpent who was standing or slithering or maybe even hovering off to the right, he's smiling. That smiling, shining, supernatural, serpent-like being was right there. Happy as a clam himself. He had told Adam and Eve that God was holding something wonderful back from them. And Eve had eaten of the apple. She had chosen to believe the serpent over the clear commands of God, and she was fine. And then she encouraged Adam to eat. She plucked a fruit off the tree, that forbidden fruit, and offered Adam to take it and eat. Would he? God, Yahweh, had specifically said not to eat of this fruit, and Adam still had a choice, a free will to say yes or no. So Adam chose, and he chose to eat, to join Eve and to take a big fat bite out of this juicy, delicious fruit. And with that, the shining, smiling, supernatural serpent, he began to laugh and triumph. He had won. He had just ruined the Garden of Eden. He had just destroyed Yahweh's Eden and thus Yahweh's plan. But now, many millennia later, there is another Adam facing the same choice. Will he obey God's specific plan and will, or will he choose his own self-ordained path? And as with the first Adam, with this Adam, the fate of the supernatural and natural world hung in the balance. And like the first Adam, with this new Adam, the shining, smiling, smirking supernatural serpent was waiting to pounce, to strike, to once again say to Yahweh, God the Father, that he had won. What will this new Adam choose? Will he choose to obey or choose to satisfy his own will? Now, you may wonder, what in the world am I talking about? Doesn't the Bible talk about only one person named Adam and there was only one Garden of Eden, right? That is where you are wrong. The Apostle Paul later, writing in the book of Romans, says that Jesus is a new Adam, a new representative for all of humanity. Writing in Romans chapter 5, verses 12 through 21, Paul wrote, "Therefore, just as sin entered the world through one man and death through sin, in this way death spread to all people because all sinned." In fact, sin was in the world before the law, but sin is not charged to a person's account when there is no law. Nevertheless, death reigned from Adam to Moses, even over those who did not sin in the likeness of Adam's transgression. He is a type of the coming one. But the gift is not like the trespass. For if by the one man's trespass the many died, how much more have the grace of God and the gift which comes through the grace of the one man, Jesus Christ, overflowed to the many? And the gift is not like the one man's sin, because from one sin came the judgment, resulting in condemnation, but from many trespasses came the gift, resulting in justification. If by the one man's trespass death reigned through that one man, how much more will those who receive the overflow of grace and the gift of righteousness reign in life through the one man, Jesus Christ? So then, as through one trespass there's condemnation for everyone, so also through one righteous act there is justification leading to life for everyone. For just as through one man's disobedience the many were made sinners, so also through the one man's obedience the many will be made righteous. The law came along to multiply the trespass, but where sin multiplied, grace multiplied even more, so that just as sin reigned in death, so also grace will reign through righteousness, resulting in eternal life through Jesus Christ our Lord. Now, there's a lot to unpack there from Paul's statement in Romans, but I want us to grasp this one truth today, that Jesus was a representative of all of humanity, and through Jesus' obedience, we all have a way to avoid the eternal damnation that should have been our fate. By not choosing to eat of his metaphorical apple, by choosing instead to obey the will of his Father Yahweh, Jesus secured for all of us a way to avoid the punishment that we were all destined to have to go through. And Matthew alludes to this comparison when he writes about Jesus facing his greatest temptation in the Garden of Gethsemane. That's what we're going to look at this week out of the story of Matthew. Matthew's telling of Jesus' time in the Garden of Gethsemane. Let's back up and pick up the story where we last left off. Jesus had sung a hymn and had begun to head out of Jerusalem. It was around midnight when Jesus left the upper room, walked through Jerusalem, and began to walk up to the top of the Mount of Olives. I wonder if that long walk was a time of encouragement for Jesus, to be around his best friends, his wonderful 12. But then as he began to near the top of the Mount of Olives, I wonder if the reality of what he was going to have to endure began to weigh on him. The reality of what he was going to suffer must have begun to eat away at him. And I think by the time we reach the top, we have a Jesus full of emotion, full of fear and anguish. Jesus, remember, is all man. And I think sometimes we forget about that. We think Jesus serenely faced all obstacles ahead of him. I think in this passage, you see a Jesus very much dealing with the raw emotion of fear, the raw emotion of anguish and sadness. And so you can imagine, maybe it was some offhand comment by one of the disciples about how when Jesus ruled over Rome, things were going to be different. Or maybe some note of levity when Jesus wanted them to realize the awfulness of what they were about to face. And I can imagine that is when Jesus warns them, tonight, all of you will fall away because of me. For it is written, I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock will be scattered. Matthew 26:31. Jesus is warning his disciples that the intimacy of the Last Supper is shortly to be replaced by disloyalty and cowardice. They will find him, Jesus, an obstacle to devotion and will forsake him in an instant. But remember, he suffered all of the human side of living, but he did it without sin. He didn't sin in his life down here. And he rebuked them, but he also offers them hope. Verse 32, but after I have risen, I will go ahead of you to Galilee. Here's the bad, he's saying, what is about to happen. You will all act like cowards and run. But here's the hope. I'll see you again in Galilee. Remember that. We will see each other again. Your cowardice will not last. We'll be together in Galilee. And then Jesus quotes out of the book of Zechariah. He quotes Zechariah 13, verse 7. Now, in Zechariah, it says this, sword, awake against my shepherd, against the man who is my associate. This is the declaration of the Lord of armies. Strike the shepherd, and the sheep will be scattered. I will turn my hand against the little ones. Zechariah 13, verse 7. In this passage, the prophet Zechariah sees a time when Yahweh sees a day when, owing to the prevailing apostasy of Israel, the shepherd who is close to Yahweh, as opposed to the false shepherd talked about in Zechariah 11, the shepherd who is close to Yahweh is cut down and the sheep scattered. And in chapter 13 of Zechariah, verses 8 through 9, most of the sheep perish. But One third are left, and after being refined, they become my people. They are people who begin to say, Yahweh is our God. So even by using this particular verse, this particular prophecy, Jesus is giving his disciples some hope. He is saying that their falling away will occur this very night. That their falling away this very night continues to the cross and beyond and is emblematic of the coming dispersion of the whole nation. But one author wrote, but a purified remnant, a third, will survive the refining and make up the people of God, my people. End quote. So thus, at the very instant, Jesus' disciples show by their scattering that they temporarily side with the unbelieving and apostate nation. But all that time, be encouraged. God is taking action to make them his true people. But of course, all that goes over the heads of the disciples. They just heard their manliness being attacked. They just all got called cowards. And if your manliness and your courage was challenged, how would you respond? I think we'd all respond like the disciples who said, no, no way, that's not true. No, no way, I won't abandon you, Jesus. No way, I will not leave you, Jesus. I think all of their responses can be summed up in Peter's response, who says, even if everyone falls away because of you, I will never fall away. Verse 33. Peter says, no way, Jesus, I will not fail you. And I guess in the Greek, the way it's written, there's a sense that Peter's response hints at the fact that Peter thinks there's still a path to glory that does not require Jesus' death. A sense that, no way, Jesus, don't worry, you won't suffer. I got your back. Man, I'm going to look after you. Me and the 12, we'll take care of all comers. Do not worry. Peter sadly still has no clue that Jesus has to die. That he has to die to suffer for the sins of the world. That's why Jesus turns to Peter and says, truly I tell you, tonight, before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times. To which Peter, in manly bravado, says, even if I have to die with you, I will never deny you. I think it's important for us as Christians to realize we need to trust Jesus and not ourselves. We need to trust what Jesus says and not ourselves. The Bible is full of admonitions to not rely on the flesh, right? Hours later, Jesus is going to remind Peter that the flesh is willing, but the spirit is weak. You may think you're strong enough in the flesh, Christian, but your human spirit, your human flesh will often disappoint you. Instead, Jesus wants us to rely on him. Yes, they will all scatter, but I won't let you down, disciples. Jesus won't let you down, and I'll see you in Galilee. Are you going to rely on him? Remember how I said Jesus was the new Adam? The disciples are in many ways representatives of the old Adam. They could not stand up even if they wanted to. They were too weak in the flesh. Jesus just drops this bombshell, and you know what? That never feels good. When your leader tells everyone that follows him, hey, you're all going to fall away, you're all going to fail me, that's not a cool moment for you as a follower, right? And I think there was a lot of anger and confusion among the disciples. And remember, it's late at night or very early in the morning, around 1 in the morning or maybe even around midnight. Either way, the disciples are confused, are hurt, and are now physically tired as well as emotionally distressed. So Jesus heads with the disciples back down the mountain to one of their favorite spots to hang out, the Garden of Gethsemane. And this is where the Garden of Eden metaphor really begins to kick in. See, Jesus goes to the center garden, a private garden in the middle of the grove of olive trees that made up the garden. The Garden of Gethsemane. Gethsemane literally means wine press. And so there would be olive trees all around there that people would harvest and turn into olive oil. They would press it. In the middle of all this grove of olive trees is this beautiful little garden. And there Jesus goes. And he tells the other disciples to stay out amongst the trees, maybe fall asleep, chat, enjoy the evening. But he asks his best friends, Peter, James, and John, to come with him to that inner garden. And once there, he asks them to pray with him, to intercede with him to the Father. And so he asks them to pray, and then Jesus probably goes a little ways off, far enough away that he could pray, but close enough that the disciples could hear every word he said. And he begins to pray. Now Jesus asks for one simple thing in this prayer. Jesus begs that this cup of suffering would pass from him. He begs that what is about to happen will not happen. Please, Father, please, is there any other way that his will could be accomplished? Matthew 26, verse 39, my Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. And Jesus gets up halfway through praying and he goes over to talk to his best friends and he finds them asleep. Now it's late, right? 2 or 3 in the morning. And can you blame these guys for sleeping? But from Jesus' perspective, he had earlier warned them about the spiritual danger they were in. They were about to be struck and scattered. He had been foretelling his upcoming death for weeks now, and it was about to happen. And these guys are sleeping? They're sleeping. So he wakes them up, and he tells them off for being so spiritually weak. He asks Peter, couldn't you stay awake with me 1 hour? Verse 41, stay awake and pray so that you won't enter into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. So Jesus goes back to praying. And then he gets up again and goes over to talk to the disciples, and he finds them again asleep. And this time, the Bible says the disciples were so tired they couldn't even open their eyes. Again, the old Adam living in the flesh. The old Adam allowing their flesh to get in the way of their spiritual needs. But have you ever been there? When you physically can't do it? When you just physically fail? I know for me it's in devotions. I fall asleep all the time during devotions. Or maybe I get lazy and don't spend time in prayer or listening from the Word, listening from the Father, what he would talk to me through the Word. And I get lazy and I'm tired and I'm just letting the flesh, Paul calls it the old man, take over. But in the New Testament life, being filled with the Spirit, right? In the New Testament, under the New Covenant, I have a choice. I can be filled with the Spirit or filled with the flesh. And Jesus expected his disciples to choose the Spirit, to choose allegiance, to follow him. He warned them here, stay awake and pray. To be spiritually awake and when awake, to pray and to pray desperately for God's help. But here we have Jesus who represents the new Adam. Here we are in a garden, and here we have another man being tempted, just like the old Adam. Here we have another man who has a choice before him. Do I obey God the Father, or do I walk away? Do I obey the will of my Father, or do I obey my own will? And the temptation, I think, was great. Because another spiritual being was also in that garden. Same as the first time. This spiritual being was evil and offered Jesus another choice, another option. And it could have seemed so much more inviting. Satan's essentially offering, do my will and you avoid suffering. Do my will and you will have joy and avoid suffering. Do my will and you will gain power and prestige and avoid suffering. Do my will and you will have saved yourself from sufferings. The first Adam listened to that serpent, that evil Satan, and chose self and sin. But not this Adam. This Adam ended his prayer with this decision. Yet not as I will, but as you will. Matthew 26, verse 39. Yet not as I will, but as you will. Not my choice, but yours. Not my desires, but your desires. I will obey. I will choose suffering and death, because that is the way that you, my Father, have chosen as a way for me to obey, and also as a way to joy. And I will trust that you're going to raise me up in the end. I will obey. One author wrote it this way: in the first garden, not your will but mine changed paradise to desert and brought man from Eden to Gethsemane. Now, not my will but yours brings anguish to the man who prays it, but transforms the desert into the kingdom and brings man from Gethsemane to the gates of glory. End quote. Obey. There's the old hymn, trust and obey, for there's no other way to be happy in Jesus but to trust and obey. But it's not easy, right? It's not easy to say what Jesus said, especially in the face of temptation. It was not easy for Jesus to allow himself to be beaten and bruised and be sacrificed for a sin he never committed. I also think of other Bible characters. It wasn't easy for Joseph to trust God while waiting for years in a nasty, terrible prison. It wasn't easy for Paul to obey and preach the gospel, especially when the threat of being beaten and thrown in prison was real. Paul says, 3 times I was beaten with rods. Once I received a stoning. 5 times I received 40 lashes minus one. 3 times I was shipwrecked. I've spent a night and a day in the open sea. He faced hardships and dangers. But at the end of it, he said, I will not boast about me. No, I will boast about my weaknesses because of what Christ was doing in his life through his weaknesses. He will not give up. He will keep fighting. He will obey no matter the cost. Because he chose to obey the Father. Because unlike the old Adam, who did choose the sinful way, this new Adam, he's going to choose right. He's going to obey. And so Jesus gets up. And he goes over to the disciples the last time, and he wakes them up. But now Jesus is seeing a long line of torches winding their way towards them. And at the head of that long line of torches is Judas. His betrayer was here. But Jesus sounds different. He sounds confident because now he tells the disciples, are you still sleeping and resting? See, the time is near. The Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Get up. Let's go. See, my betrayer is near. Matthew 26, verses 45 through 46. Get up. Let's go. That's what Jesus says. That's a new determined Jesus. That's a new confident Jesus. Get up. Let's go. I want to encourage you that obeying the will of God is not some stoic response. It's not something we should do with this glum approach. Okay, I'll obey. No. Get up. Let's go. Get up. Let's go and obey. Get up. And let's go and see the adventure God will take us on in obedience. Get up. Let's go. I hope this week you are encouraged in the strength of Jesus to get up and go and obey. And be confident that God, that Jesus, he's got this. He'll take care of you. Just trust him. Get up and let's go.
Thank you for listening to Baldhead Bible Podcast. If you have any questions or comments, we would love to hear from you. You can comment on our Facebook page or email us at baldheadbible@gmail.com. If you would like to support this podcast, please check out our Patreon page at www.patreon.com/baldheadbible. Bald Head Bible Podcast, making the Bible come to life. New episodes added every week.